This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So, this is the fourth podcast and the sixth day of the Cannes Film Festival. Welcome to Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast, live from the Croisette. I'm currently here on the Presse de Terrasse, which is a new little enclave that I've just minutes ago discovered or been introduced to by my special guest, Mr. Danny Kasman from MUBI, who is the director of content over there. Danny, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, it's a little different today in that in Cannes, for the first 5 days, it's been radiant sunshine, and today it's been driving rain. We got soaked this morning, and everything's a bit cooler and a bit quieter, which is kind of nice, actually. Sort of feels like there's been a purge of sorts.
Well, it's oddly tranquil because we just came out of a red carpet premiere, and in maybe 30 minutes there's like another red carpet premiere, and you'd think there'd be a lot of hubbub going on out here, but instead it seems... It's very nice.
Yeah, calm. No, I think if by the end of the podcast you start hearing Sex Bomb by Tom Jones in the background, that'll be the red carpet, because we're probably sat about 30 metres away from it. So, but we've got Danny on the podcast today to have a chat about some of the films that we've been watching over the weekend and over the last 3 or 4 days. Some sort of old hands who've been in competition many times, and some newcomers, and two of the three female directors who have been selected for this year's competition. Firstly, though, we'd love to talk about a specific strand of the Cannes Film Festival, which is not part of the, I guess, the central official selection, as they call it. It's known as the Cannes de Réalisateurs.
Your French is better than mine.
Yeah. Which stands for the Director's Fortnight.
Yes.
And this year, it's the, I believe, 50th edition, which has been a cause for celebration. And they've had lots of their kind of old alumni involved in making a daily fanzine. And they've got people like Jim Jarmusch and Naomi Kawase, no less, doing playlists for them as we're waiting for the films to start.
Yeah, I was listening to that Jarmusch playlist at, I think it was 8:30 a.m. this morning. Eric B. and Rakim was great.
So... at MUBI, you're in a partnership with the Kanzen, and you're celebrating its 50th anniversary. As a frequent festival goer, why is the Kanzen important?
Sure, I mean, it's a great question, and I think maybe just to take a step back for a second, you were saying it's a separate strand, and I think one of the things that many people, film lovers or festival followers, don't really realize about Cannes is people say the Cannes Film Festival or Cannes, and actually what they're talking about are several different entities that happened at the same time in the town of Cannes. The main thing that everyone thinks about, the red carpet, the competition, that's, as you say, the official selection, which has many sort of subcomponents. There's an out of competition section, there's the opening and closing night films, there's a Cannes Classics, which are restored prints or DCPs of classic films. There's the in certain regards section. There's all these subsections and so forth. But in the same city, at the same time, there's three separate festivals that are technically unrelated entirely to Cannes, which is so baffling. It's like it's such a unique idea to come to this city and attend a festival, and actually you're attending many festivals, if you so choose, because many journalists, you know, mostly stick to the official selection, stick to the competition. But also in the same town, there's... the Director's Fortnight, there's the Critics Week, Semaine de la Critique, and there's also an even smaller event called ESCID, which specializes in French titles. But of those sections, the Director's Fortnight is the most important, even though actually the Semaine de la Critique is a bit older. I think this year is its 57th anniversary, but the Fortnight is celebrating its 50th anniversary, and the Fortnight is really sort of a paradigmatic festival in that it was created in May 68 as a sort of, in contradistinction to the official Cannes Film Festival, which was sort of canceled halfway through due to the protests surrounding the labor strikes and the student strikes in France in May. And as those strikes went on, there were sort of more calls and organizations for the filmmakers to withdraw their films officially from Cannes. And this sort of context inspired this, it's almost like renegade startup festival. It's such a bold idea to start at the festival that's the most important film festival in the world, a simultaneous festival that says, no, like, we're choosing the films that are of the moment, that are engaged. Now it's its 50th year, so you can look back at the kind of films they've been selecting and see that, they've shown works by Herzog and Bresson and Oshima and Gorel and Bruno Dumont and so on and so forth. Names that started young when they were debuting there are now venerated. To this day, they're showing sort of works that are both by recognized, established auteurs and also new sort of emergent filmmakers. That spirit lives on, and I think one of the great things about it is you see it as a distinctive difference.
If there's any rivalry there,
I'd be fascinated to know what the politics are between them. And I think last year was probably a better example than this year, because last year when the official selection announced their competition, it was like pretty good. There was like names we recognized and films we wanted to see. But then when the Fortnight announced its lineup, it had all these sort of major established filmmakers that one associates with competition. There was Bruno Dumont with his young Joan of Arc film. There was Claire Denis with her Juliette Binoche movie, Let the Sunshine In. There was Philippe Garrel with Lover for a Day. Big name films, really important art cinema that one would think would be in the main section, but were not. And so, it creates in our minds this sort of like, what are these conversations? Who's fighting for what premieres? And it's this sort of inside baseball, like gossip as to why a film is premiering in the Fortnight, why it's premiering in official selection, why it's a premiering out of competition in the official selection. And this is kind of a little bit related to the Netflix Cannes Film Festival controversy that erupted earlier.
I think one of the cliches of discussing Cannes, when you're in Cannes especially, is this notion of the journalists taking this kind of higher view of things and trying to sort of second guess why certain films are screened in a certain place. So you'll see a bad competition film and say, oh, that shouldn't be in the competition. Then you'll see a really good Uncertain Regard film and say, well, that should have been in the competition. And the reality is, behind closed doors, it's business, it's deals, it's money changing hands, it's if you show this you can show that. Mm-hmm. And it's a world I don't believe we'll ever truly understand.
No, but it's one that's, as you point out, is really fascinating, and not just so much for the abstract notion of this film's better, it should be here, this film's worse, why is it here, but there's a real sort of mystery to film festival selection. I think the art world, sort of the idea of curation in general, and no festival cultivates that mystery quite like the Cannes Film Festival, whose programmers are sort of, as you say, behind closed doors, whose choices are a bit opaque, whose choices are probably, for the competition anyway, the most important choices in the film world. And yet, why exactly this film and not that film, or why this filmmaker and not that filmmaker, or this country and not that country, or this gender and not that gender? All these questions are not ones that they want to answer, and they just put it out there and they leave it to us to judge.
So, Director's Fortnight, yeah. just to add that MUBI are celebrating the Director's Fortnight.
Yeah, we've been collaborating with the Fortnight for several years now. In fact, some of our theatrical releases that we've picked up to release both in the UK and the US have premiered at the Fortnight. They're really close to our hearts in spirit, this sort of alternative spirit. I mean, I wouldn't want to analogize MUBI to what they're doing, but what we like to think of ourselves at MUBI is that we're not the big platform. We're trying to do something more idiosyncratic, specialized, unique, and exciting for the audience rather than sort of standardized. So it was sort of a natural partnership to work with them. And we've shown and highlighted many of their films on MUBI over the years, but specifically for the 50th anniversary, we're partnering with them to show films on the platform in many different countries through their history. Because I think what's important about the 50th anniversary is not just the recent titles. As I said, like, for example, Lover for a Day, that Philippe Gorel's film that premiered in the Fortnite last year. We put that out in cinemas in the UK and the US, and then put it on Mubi. But I think it's important also to go back through the history and see which filmmakers originated there, because there's ones like Gorel now, who's in his 60s, he was showing films in the Fortnite in the 70s. And I think seeing that continuity of history of how they find talent and introduce them to the press and then introduce them to audiences and sort of foster that spirit of auteurship.
So it's how festivals cultivate talent in a way, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's what we're... You know, I think you and I, as cinephiles, we come here and we're excited for the names that we know in this selection, whether it's Nuri Bilge Ceylan or Lars von Trier or the Han Solo film. But, like, actually most exciting is all these films by debut filmmakers, filmmakers from countries where we rarely get to see these films, second-time filmmakers are finally getting a step up to the spotlight, and encountering those films, especially in these sidebar sections that are... have a bit more adventurous spirit, are attracted to a little bit more risk-taking filmmaking. And that's really the exciting thing for being at a festival.
So just to add, if you get a chance, have a look on YouTube for the trailer for the director's Fortnite, because it's got this wonderful sort of clip montage and stills montage set to this kind of twinkly piano music, and it's a really lovely way to start a film. We were both at the director's Fortnite this very morning to see a new film by the French director Gaspar Noé, a proudly French film, as the film announces in an intertitle at the beginning, called Climax.
I assume many of your listeners know Gaspar Noé is an Argentine-French filmmaker, super provocative, best known for Irreversible, but has also been in Cannes with Enter the Void, and a couple years ago, his 3D sort of softcore love film called Love. And I actually hadn't realized he was making a film, and I think this film called Climax is made under a great deal of secrecy. There was basically no official synopsis. There was no footage released in anticipation of it. People really went into this screening not knowing what this was going to be, other than obviously because it's Noé, something extreme probably, highly stylized. And I think actually that the atmosphere of that encounter is part of really what makes this festival special, or just festivals in general special. And in a way, I hate to compare Noé to Jean-Luc Godard, but 2 days ago we saw the new Godard film, and that's a film that also, we, even though we know this name, we know his work, we went into the cinema and the lights went down, and we had no idea what that was going to be. No idea what that was going to be. And it was true of the Noé film, too, which, and I don't want to spoil a story, I'm not even sure there is a story per se, but it's a 90-minute party, essentially. Mm. And I think the film that it made me think of the most is Louis Buñuel's Exterminating Angels, which is about a group of bourgeois Mexican diners who come to a dining party and then mysteriously can't leave. And then the party degenerates into chaos. And in a way, this is the adaptation of that sort of idea of being, you know, a group from a certain milieu being in a place and then stuck in that place with sort of what's identified as mid-90s. I don't know why the credits state this event happens in 1996. Mid-90s sort of dance party, dance rehearsal group where everyone performs this amazing musical number to the camera in this amazing long take of maybe 10, 15 minutes of dancing to house music. And then they finish their rehearsal and they start just hanging out and drinking and sort of dancing casually. And then something happens. They sort of can't leave, and the party degenerates, and things get a little crazy. And because it's Noé, the film itself goes a little crazy as well. Mm.
I must say, I wasn't totally bowled over by the film myself.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Noé faithful will be very happy with this one. I mean, it's fairly curt. I mean, it's 95 minutes, so most of his films are running like well over 2 hours, and. But yeah, I totally agree that it's got this extraordinary kind of almost MGM musical single take where it's foregrounding the kind of human aspect of dancing and body movement. And it's a very sort of rare, quite sort of earnestly humane moment in his kind of oeuvre. And then it's kind of weird because he shows you these amazingly talented people and then he kind of stops after quite a short time, and it kind of the sort of the drama happens. And I don't know, it's kind of like take it or leave it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I'd probably leave it. Several of my friends, I was surprised to find, really liked it, because, you know, it's one of those movies, and there's probably a secret subgenre of these movies, and I don't think anyone's accurately labeled that genre, but it's movies that are describing an unpleasant experience and then want to sort of put the audience in that experience. So for this movie, I feel like this sort of rehearsal turned party becomes sort of this hellish space that no one can leave and is trapped and no one knows what's really going on. And I think that experience is intended to be also sort of projected back on the audience, and that we're stuck in this party with these people and don't know who's who and what's what and really what's going on. And I found it a little bit torturous, I must admit. I mean, his formal dexterity is really incredible, long takes, the colors and the lighting is remarkable. But you said first dance sequence has a remarkably sort of human quality to it. And I think the thing that I always find missing with his films is I really don't think he's really interested in people per se. And I find that maybe dismaying. It's just so much technique and so much immersion into a world where you're following people and watching them do things, and all the people are kind of unpleasant and mean and nasty, and you're watching them do mean and nasty things and be unpleasant, and I'm not quite sure what all that suffering's for.
I know, it seems crazy that we're going to have a very short amount of time now, because they're actually, like, if you can hear those chairs rustling in the background,
kicking us out soon.
They're kicking us out soon.
Probably doing a photo shoot on this terrace.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about Jean-Luc Godard's The Image Book, which is his latest feature, playing in the competition. Just a little side note is he wasn't present physically at the festival, but he was present via Skype. Or was it FaceTime?
It was FaceTime, yeah.
So at the press conference, a gentleman held up a phone and he fielded questions. And he seemed in, like, cheery form. But the film itself is difficult to describe. It's a collage movie of found footage, of film clips, of newsreel, of like JPEGs from the internet. It's made to look purposely bad. It's made to sound purposely bad. He's experimenting with sound design. In a way, it's kind of similar, in a very loose way, it's similar to Gaspar Noé in that it is... They're both of sensory experiences.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think you need to know Godard's work to appreciate this new one?
Maybe it's better if you don't, because as you're saying, the form of the film, this collage of clips and dialogue from movies and abrupt insertions of songs and Godard's own sort of voiceover... to continue your Gaspar Noé comparison, it's a sort of overwhelming sensory experience, and I don't think it's predicated on knowledge of his body of work. What it's predicated on is an investment in that images have meaning, like, because what this collage does, it's like an essay in image and sound form. It's making an argument by assembling clips of old movies, Hollywood movies, French movies, Japanese movies, news footage from World War II, from Vietnam War, from Yugoslavia. It's very sort of war-focused. Also, a lot of ISIS videos from the internet. And it's hoping that you have sort of faith in the meaning that images can transmit to you, in their beauty and in their terror, and that you can learn from images. And so that when you watch a movie like this, or any movie, or any news report, that you understand the sort of relationship between the camera and the reality it's filming, and then the image that comes between that camera and that reality. Because once you sort of lose touch with the power of the camera to record actual events, whether atrocities or moments of beauty, then suddenly cinema doesn't have meaning, television doesn't have meaning, journalism doesn't have meaning, and you become sort of unmoored in a world where there's no culpability for actions. And so I don't think you need to see, like, Breathless or any of his maybe more recent work that's a little bit more in this sort of cerebral essay mode. I think it's more just if you're interested in how movies and news tell the story of the times we live in through the 20th century and the 21st century, that's really what that movie's about. I have to admit, I found it incredibly dense and, like, overwhelmingly opaque at times, but still, like, invigorating, because the form the movie takes is somebody watching other movies, watching the news, and trying to make sense of the world we live in and the way that images speak about that world.
Well, Danny, I think we're going to have to wrap up now.
I rambled on too long.
Time is running out here, but thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
I'm going to let you carry on and go and have a nice stodgy dinner, no doubt.
I'm going to have some gelato. It's so nice.
Okay. So if you let us know what you think of the podcast, you can email us at truthandmovies@tcolondon.com, or we're on Twitter at LWLies. And this has once again been a 7Digital production.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.